You've eaten Gotham's wealth, its spirit, but your feast is nearly over.
This is not my home. It's an operating table. And I'm the surgeon.
Why aren't you laughing?
From this moment on, none of you are safe.
Welcome to the Batman Book Club, a podcast exploring the Dark Knight Library. I'm your host, Ryan Lauer. Batman Book Club is a proud member of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. Just go to batmanonfilm.com, click on podcasts, and you'll find the Batman Podcast Network. Batman Book Club's also on Patreon, so if you like what's going on with the show and you want to help support the show and keep those generators running in the Wayne Manor Study, go to patreon.com/thebatmanbc. Now, thank you for listening to episode 197, The Joker. Speaking of Batman on Film, I've got the head honcho from the site. He's the gumbo guru around these parts. Bill Ramey's returning back to the show. Bill, thanks for coming back to the Batman Book Club.
Thanks for letting me come back on.
Of course.
And of course, I always say when we do the social hour, you know, thank y'all for letting me, you know, do that show on Batman on Film. So
yeah.
I appreciate it.
You know, you have to ask a lot of permission to do these Batman talkings on the interwebs. I think it's been a while since you've been on here solo, because I think the last time you were on, which was cool, it was quite a while ago, but we had the great Michael Uslan on, and you and I just kind of played passengers and let him just kind of run the show, you know.
That was the last one, was when Michael was on, right?
Okay. Yeah, cool. Last one you were on was then. So now he's, you know, we have more mic time for you and I to dig into a good one.
Well, he's the professor, and I just sat back and
just students.
Let him school us. Yes, absolutely.
I sat there acting like I knew what I was talking about, but clearly I didn't know anything. It's like, you, sir, just talk. We're going to dip very far back now. What are we at? 84 years. Yeah, 84 years. We're going to dip back to the first issue of the Batman comic, Batman number one. And we're going to talk a story contained in that issue called The Joker. Pretty simple. It says exactly what it is. And all of us now know this is the debut of The Joker, written by Bill Finger. Art by Bob Kane, obviously released in 1940. It was released physically. I mention how else you can find certain issues or stories there. I mean, you can find this anywhere, everywhere, contained in many collections, all over the place, digitally in many collections and all that. So I'm just going to skip listing and just go straight to Bill. Which version did you read for this episode?
From the Batman Chronicles, Volume 1.
There you go. In which the Batman Chronicles, that was like the first trade that was trying to take, that was releasing like every Batman issue in order.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget how many volumes that got up to, maybe 10, 11. And then it seems like they just stopped.
Yeah.
And then they started to, and then they released collections of Batman, the Golden Age. And I think that kind of took over, replaced the Chronicles line. And
did they repeat some of the stories?
Yeah. Like that? They started from Detective 27 and went all the way through. I think it, I don't know if there's six is good. Six volumes of that, maybe a couple more, but, and then they started to dip into the Golden Age or the Silver Age after that. For me, I actually checked this out on my favorite app of all time, Hoopla. And read it digitally in The Joker, a celebration of 75 years.
Okay.
I have multiple things that they're in the archives right now that has this issue collected, including like the Golden Age Volume 1 that I already mentioned. But yeah, so I read this one digitally. Do you remember when you first read this?
I was a kid. And I don't know. Probably it was in like, you know, they would have these oversized comics that would have like a couple of news stories, mm-hmm. and then it would be full of like golden age and old stories. So I'm assuming it was from one of those.
Because then, then it was like, if I'm not mistaken, you had to go find Batman 1 to read this, unless they reprinted these like older stories in the backs of issues to get history.
Yeah.
This was before the trade collections and all that stuff. Right.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I was a kid. So
was the Joker scary to you at that time, at this point? Or did you see Cesar Romero when you read this and you're like, ha, ha, ha.
No, I'm trying to figure what came first, either me reading the Joker from Batman number one or the Joker's five-way revenge in Batman 251. So, you know, before I read those, the Joker was Cesar Romero to me.
Yeah.
And I remember one of the reasons why 251 of Batman has such a big impact on me is I'm reading it and thinking, this Joker isn't, you know,
he's not some funny jester laughing guy, Mr. Freeze,
you know? So, but yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, that's what Batman 251 did, is bring back the original incarnation of the Joker, and they're pretty similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm looking up now. Oh, wow. Episode 59 of this show in June of 2021, you were on here talking Joker's five-way revenge. I had to look that up. That was one of your first ones that you were like, I got to talk that one. Because as you've said, that's your favorite story. Favorite
individual Batman story. Yes, for many reasons.
Yep. I do not remember when I first read this. I couldn't guess at all. I think I was a little later in the game, because my first two like trades I ever got, or as gifts as a kid, Lonely Place of Dying, and then The Greatest Batman Stories Ever Told. And this was not included in The Greatest Batman Stories Ever Told. And then trade collections after that was like, you know, Nightfall, and then Year One, and then Killing Joke. And so at some point in probably early 2000s is when I was able to get my hands on some collections that had this first story in it that I read. So, I mean, yeah, by then, you know, I was a teenager getting my first, and I'd already experienced a lot of other Joker stories before I read this one. And then lastly, and I asked if you wanted to come back on, why did you choose this story?
Well, I asked first if anyone had done it, and I was kind of surprised. You know, to be honest, that hadn't been done. And, you know, me, I like the historical, or the stories that have a lot of historical significance.
Yeah.
And certainly Batman number one has a lot of historical significance. Yes.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So,
and I'm with you. I think people, and rightfully so, I mean, I totally get it. Of they like choosing, you know, like flashier, maybe newer ish than going way back, because, you know, comics read differently in 1940 than they do now, than they did in the 70s and the 80s, 90s. But I think, as we'll get into it here, of like, it didn't surprise me. And I know there's another one you were flirting with too. And neither one really surprised me.
Yeah. We'll save that one.
Neither really surprised me that those were ones you were thinking about, but I'm glad you landed on this one just for like historical context. And I haven't, honestly, I haven't read this one in a little while either. So
it's been since I read it.
It's good to revisit it. Yeah. I think we should start, like, obviously, as it says, this is the debut of the Joker. Now, in looking up some stuff, there's three creditors in the creation of Joker, of Bill Finger, Bob Kane, and Jerry Robinson. Mm-hmm. What I looked up had a little variation pending who told the story on how Joker got created. By your memory, playing gotcha here. Like your memory and knowledge of like what are you familiar with as far as how he was created?
I'll go by what I was taught by the professor.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Uselin. And I actually went to a Comic-Con panel in San Diego with him and Jerry Robinson.
There you go.
And sat right in the front.
Nice.
Where I learned a lot about the creation of the Joker. And I would say that from just from that and you know, talking to Michael over the years, and I do think that people, different people had their hands in it, but Jerry Robinson probably had two hands in there, and while others may have had a hand or a couple fingers, if that makes sense. Fingers.
Yeah.
It's all connected.
Yes, it's all connected. The I made sure to go to my archives actually, and I don't know if you remember this book. It's just called The Joker by Daniel Wallace.
Yes.
It's a great book. I haven't read it or looked in this in quite a while, but I wanted to see the very, like, see the beginnings and, you know, match up stories. The obvious thing that everybody I think goes to is Conrad Veidt in The Man Who Laughs.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's an obvious one that, like, any story you read or look up on the creation of the Joker, he's there. And so that's an obvious influence. A Joker card obviously is an influence. The Coney Island steeplechase sign is something that I'd forgotten when I'd read this book, and there's a picture included. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Apparently that was like an influence of Robinson.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? Let me take a look at that. Yeah. I think I've seen that before. Yes. Yes. Okay.
And there's an image of a man smiling on that. And I think that definitely, you know, that has some similarities to it. And I wasn't there. I didn't meet either of these people, haven't heard them or nothing, but I just looked up what I saw. And Jerry Robinson had the steeplechase part. Finger had a bit of like a Joker, the Joker card aspect. And then I think, and maybe he had the Man Who Laughs, which I still have never seen. I need to watch it just so I know that I've seen it. But I know Bob Kane, I think on Wikipedia in an interview, he'd said in like 94 of just like, Jerry Robinson will always say that he's part creator until the day that he dies and blah, blah, blah. But he didn't have much of a hand. It was me and Bill Finger and wasn't there. I don't know. I just know those three names. Yeah, like you kind of said, of their names are mentioned. They have creation. But then, oh, man, did you get to actually go up and meet Robinson like afterward?
I did.
You did?
Yes. Okay.
How was it?
Very nice.
Very nice?
Very nice. Yeah.
What do you say in a moment like that? I know he's since passed, but to go to him and be like, hey, I like your Joker character.
That's exactly what I said. I use that voice.
Okay, good.
Well, luckily Michael was there. Okay. Michael was he was the moderator.
Okay.
And so I went up and said, hey, hello, Mr. Uselin. And and he said, Bill, you have to meet Jerry Robinson. And I was like, okay, I will meet Jerry Robinson. You know, you got to use that voice.
Yeah.
So just, you know, shake his hand and say, nice to meet you, sir. You know?
Yeah. I think the fascinating thing, and I'm not a historian on Jerry Robinson, but I know enough of it's fascinating to me. And similar to Bob Kane, I think was like 17 when he was being a cartoonist or something. But Robinson was like an assistant at 17. Very young, and then to think he had a hand in, you know, hand or both hands in the creation of Joker and stuff like that young is, you know, it's kind of mind-boggling to me at that. But characters created, it's definitely it was mentioned about like editors and I think Robinson and himself, but then also dialogue in the story too of like giving Batman more of a threat as opposed to just like some of these mob criminals that are taken down by a couple punches and done. And I think Batman even mentions at one point of, you know, there being someone who's not as someone who's a little bit more tough than what he's used to seeing. This was, I think what I looked up, this was like the 13th Batman story. Like after through Detective and everything. And in Batman number one, I don't know that you can necessarily count it, but you know, it's like the opening is like the origin story of Batman. And then it jumps into the Joker and the actual issue. But I think there was 12 before this story. Not much of a threat up to this point. In this, not this story, but also included in Batman number one was a story where Joker originally was going to die at the end of that issue. And they made sure that he didn't, because they started to feel that there's something here. Yeah. And all of us, I think, are very glad that they made that adjustment so that he lived. But in this story, I mean, let's talk about it. Like what's been your impression of this story, revisiting it this time? Like, what's your impression of how this one holds up?
I think it holds up really well, and I see its influence. You see its influence in The Dark Knight, the movie.
I have a big bullet point here that we're going to talk about The Dark Knight, because I love to talk about The Dark Knight whenever I can. Yeah. But this one actually makes sense.
Yeah. Yes. It's a clever story, you know, with, and there is, I like the, you know, the Joker comes, you know, but it's so date, you know, people at night sit, listen to the radio, you know,
and yeah,
all the dialogue in my mind here is like, you know, it's like, grotesque. Yeah. See the Joker. Yeah. You see the Joker. See, you
know, that, yeah. See.
Yeah. It sounds like that in my mind when I'm reading some of these, you know, characters in this comic, like the cops or whatever, but it's, you know, the Joker announcing his crimes, and then he explains how he pulled it off, you know, cause they're all, how did he do it? You know? And
yeah,
cops are like, there's, you know, surrounding these people when Joker announces that I'm going to kill such and such at 12 midnight. The Joker has spoken. Ha, 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 whatever, you know. Ha, 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 yee, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Got that, right? Yeah. So, and then he's like, you know, these fools, they think, you know, they did not, and I don't know, he has no minions in here. It's like he's in a lair by himself. So he's talking, just, you know. He's just talking out loud. I don't know to himself.
An interior designer as well.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's like a tiger skin rug. He's got a big theater mask on the wall, and he's got furniture and this big old throne. It's, you know, it's sure. Why not? It's comic books at, you know, it's a simpler time, and like not like fans didn't demand explanation. It just was. Yeah. Kind of like the Joker himself. Yeah. Joker just is. At this point, hop right into it. And like you said, of couples sitting at the radio, yes, you take that time. And how I love the quick reference, because it's still pretty fresh, of the, like the opening couple when they hear the Joker. And he says, well, first, like you just said, haw, that's just a gag.
Yeah.
Like that fellow who scared everybody with that story about Mars the last time.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's unaware, but I think one of the most fascinating stories is to visit that reference of the original broadcast of War of the Worlds and the panic it induced at the time. It was definitely, Orson it was one Wells, I'd heard, yeah. one I'd heard in high school, and then in college, we listened to the broadcasts in our media class, you know, and did stuff and whatever. And it's pretty fascinating. So I love that little reference in that, but like it's a story that it's like its bones are very strong. And all it necessarily needs is just like, you know, some freshening up, a couple of fresh coats of paint, you know, with the times. I think it's very relatable in a sense to the 70s, the Laughing Fish story from Englehart and Rogers. Very relatable to that. Retold in the 2005 story, The Man Who Laughs, by Ed Brubaker and Doug Monkey. it's a retelling of it. And I think that totally works because it's updating the time with language and art and stuff. And then as we just saw in the Batman, the Brave and the Bold title that Tom King and Mitch Gerrits did of the winning card was a retelling of this, but through a 2023 lens. And I thought, I'm like, they didn't really change the story that much. They just updated it to make it feel like how we read that story. I feel is maybe how comic book readers read this back in 1940. You know, there's an era of like scariness and like unpredictability, and the Joker's a very valid threat. And so I think it's telling that this story gets retold, but it's not like eye rolling of like, oh, another remake of this story. It's like it's just a fresh coat of paint. And I think it just kind of, it works. And that tells something about the, you know, the roots of the story itself.
Yeah. Clearly. I mean, the Joker has, I mean, you know, we know the Joker eventually, not too long after this, the Joker became like a harmless prankster type.
Yeah.
Not, and I don't want to say menace, but like annoyance to Batman, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, this in was that, his original. Yeah.
But real quick, you say that in the Joker, a celebration of 75 years, there's like write ups in between stories, and they even say exactly what you just said. And
really,
the Joker's last murder for several years took place in Laugh Town Laugh, Detective Comics number 62, which was 1942. And basically, then, like, after that story, for a long time, he was what you just said.
Yeah.
He was like a prankster.
From 42 to 73, basically.
Wow. Can you imagine that? From right now, and 30, like, Joker just kind of becomes a gimmick, and ha 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 ha. And 30 years from now, we'll get scary Joker back.
Yeah.
I don't want that.
No. It's,
I don't want that.
So, yeah, I mean, but you think about, I mean, Joker is what, 84? 84 years of the Joker. So, you had, what, just a few years, two or three years there at the beginning, and then that 30-year gap, and then, of course, since 1973, we're talking 51 years now, the Joker's been what he was originally intended to be.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, credit that all to, and I know we can go, you can go back and listen to like the, when we talked about Five Way Revenge, but I mean, that was orchestrated by Denny O'Neill, was it not? Of returning him back to how he originally was.
Yes.
This, and so even though I'm not too fresh in the sense of, you know, there's certain issues, Five Way Revenge, I'm pretty fresh on because I reread that a lot. And, you know, Year One, fresh on Long Halloween. This era of Batman stories, I'm not too fresh on because I can't just sit and binge read these.
Yeah. Like
they're a little harder read for me to get through. A lot of dialogue.
Dialogue and just a short story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know, I think we've said
like
that
13 pages or something. Yeah. But it's like it crams a lot of dialogue in those 13 pages, in which maybe some people like that, maybe some people don't. I don't know, but for me, it just like it's a little harder of a read. But I think this one actually, and I was surprised by this too, of in this reread of like I think this one reads pretty well.
It does.
I think the story moves because you've got like what is it, four situations of the Joker's like announcing and then going through with it, like four encounters with Joker. And so I just tend to think like there's a good pacing here that's done in, let's see, the judge, Henry Claridge, Jay Wild, old Brute Nelson, which that was an
Nelson.
Adjustment.
Yeah.
What a good name.
I like that. Yeah.
A mobster in this story, but in that retelling of the winning card they just did, Brute Nelson was just like a playboy.
Yeah.
Kind of doofus. And then Judge Drake was another one that he did that Joker announces to go get here. And which, spoiler alert, he does. So yeah, there's four murders in this. And you know, since I'm not too fresh on the stories that came before it, it made me curious on if this is maybe the most violent quote unquote violent Batman story yet. I don't know how much murder there was in previous, you know, Batman stories.
Mm-hmm.
And not like
probably on par.
Yeah.
I just remember, you know, it's on par with, I mean, we're talking about, what did you mention? This is the 13th Batman story.
Yeah.
So yeah, this is, I would say, on par with a lot of the other stuff, you know?
And funny because in a way that, you know, that can squeak by as being like have an impact because there isn't like, you know, there's no slashing. There's not an ounce of red blood or anything like that.
Yeah.
It's the smile, but you get the point across because they say basically he's dead, but it's like that smile. And it that's just as effective. That's such a great gimmick of the Joker that's lasted. If there's anything, I mean, you said the Dark Knight, when we saw that prologue of the bank robbery, when that pin is pulled in that bomb of that bank manager's mouth, I thought the first time I saw it, since all I saw was the prologue, I was like, oh man, I wonder if we go back and see him and his, you know, his face is in that smile because there's gas. Not to say I was disappointed that that wasn't there, but it was just kind of, you know, there I was. Let's see, 2008. So what are we at there? 68 years later. And I was like, is it going to be the smile? Is it going to be the smile? You know?
Yeah.
Great gimmick that still, you know, that we still think of. As I said, 13th story. I didn't even consider this, but I looked up, you remember Andrew Farrago's big Batman book for that came out in 2019. That was the anniversary book. He'd talked about this issue briefly and he brought it up and I was like, oh, that this was the first time Batman was called the Dark Knight.
Yeah. I made a note of that. Yes.
All right. Yeah. So there we go. A little Batman history for hopefully everybody learned. Yeah, look at that. He's the Dark Knight, birthed in Batman number one, 1940. Let's see. What else do I got? Let's talk about the Dark Knight.
Okay.
I can do that any day, all day. The influences. I mentioned before on here when I talked Strange Apparitions, and we know backstory of that version Joker. That's Jack Nicholson's Joker in 89. Sure. Is the Strange Apparitions Joker, like essentially.
Yeah.
Heath's Joker in The Dark Knight, this, and you know this firsthand because you talk to people there, like on the set. Yes, there's like some Killing Joke influence there, but then really comparing and contrasting, there's a lot of influence of this issue on Heath's performance and story as the Joker. What in reading it this time, like, I don't know how a reaction, but almost like a little like, like what all moments were you instantly like, yes.
I was able to talk to Christopher Nolan about this, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, talking about how the Joker just is.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need an origin. I think he's scarier if there is no origin. And with this first Batman story with the Joker, he just is. So you have that aspect, you know. This reminded me of that again. The, you know, there's a little bit in The Dark Knight. I mean, not a little bit, but when he takes to the video camera and, you know, TV and, you know, if Coleman Reese is, you know, blah, 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 you know, this and that, that's all comes from the Joker announcing his crimes from this.
Just updating the tool.
Yes. Yes.
That's all.
The cop, when he's disguised as the police chief,
oh, yes.
You know?
Oh, yes.
There's that real, you know, the police Gotham at the funeral where the commissioner, and you briefly see Heath Ledger as the Joker, but out without his makeup on, you know, as part of that group of fake cops that were there. That's another influence. So I really, man, there's a lot of, I say a lot. Yeah. It just, you know, but that's a lot of, for one comic from 1940, it's a pretty big influence.
Yeah.
On that film, you know?
Yeah. And I think took, you know, it's just taking core elements, you know, of like the announcement, like you said, the clever ways of outsmarting the police and such. And I mean, I remember that the Dark Knight teaser trailer where all we heard was audio as the bat symbol was slowly starting to get revealed. And we hear that Joker, you know, starting tonight, people will die, which was, you know,
that's the first
alteration of the audio, because that's not how the movie plays out. But, you know, starting tonight, people will die. Oh, man of my word, you know, that thing.
Yeah,
it was so fun to listen to it and kind of just create an image in your head of like, what are we going to see when he's saying this in the movie? But that's almost like that's in like meant to or not. It's like that's a complete nod in itself of how the Joker would have relayed the message in 1940. It's like we're listening to a radio basically, and he's chiming in and he's making his threats if somebody's going to die. Like that's what this freaking comic did.
I was at Comic-Con when that teaser came out, San Diego Comic-Con. And that's the first thing I thought of is Batman number one, you know, and the Joker announcing his crimes that he's going to commit, murders, you know, that murders and robberies at the same time. And, you know, that when I'm reading this, really, it's Heath Ledger's Joker voice for this Joker.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, clearly, you know, when
can you hear Heath Ledger as saying about like, if the police expect to play against the Joker, they had best be prepared to be dealt from the bottom of the deck.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
That's a little bit of like that dialogue can be updated.
The dialogue itself, yes, but the sound of the voice, and there's almost a little bit of that. All right, see, with Heath Ledger's Joker, isn't there a little bit of that thrown in?
Yeah,
I know
a little
he
bit.
Said something he told Nolan, like, I'm kind of like going with like how, you know, ventriloquists talk,
and my gosh, I forget the musician's name.
Yeah.
That was brought up of like, this had to be, because it was an Australian. Oh my gosh. When you listen to the guy, Tom Waits.
Tom Waits, yeah.
Like, when I finally listened to him on one of the talk show that he was on, and I heard his voice, I was like, holy shit, there's no way that this wasn't an influence on that voice. So anybody listening that doesn't know what I'm talking about, look it up. Tom Waits, Waits, Heath Ledger, and kind of mind blowing. But I'm with you. Like, and that's, I mean, that just shows like the kind of mark that obviously anybody that's heard me open my mouth knows my love for Ledger's Joker. But yeah, there's moments of that, his dialogue here, that I could hear a little bit of that voice.
If he had said at one point, you know, if he had said, I'm a man of my, instead of saying I'm a man of my word, if he said, the Joker has spoken, and I would have lost it, right? You know?
Yeah. You'd have been so giddy of just like, oh my gosh, he said it, telling whoever would listen. As everybody's like, shut up, I'm trying to watch the movie. I'm like, but no, you don't understand.
I wonder how many people who have seen The Dark Knight have appreciation for what comes from this story.
I have more now. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have more now.
Even I do. Yes.
Because it's just been, quite a while since I've read this
one. It's probably doesn't even register with most people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But it's just, it is fun to just go through here with that stuff, all the things that you said. And I have it open now to him as the police officer holding, you know, holding that Joker card. Mm-hmm. And the panel right next to it is talking to the judge. So this is a bit of a stretch, but also like for me, I'm like, well, I guess it does make sense that one of the victims in this story is a judge. One of the victims in The Dark Knight is a judge. But that, that panel made me think of The Killing Joke. Mm-hmm. And Batman and Joker sitting down with the cards, and then the one isn't exactly who he who you think he is here. Yeah. The cop isn't who you think he is, and The Killing Joke, quote unquote, the Joker is not really the Joker. Also a stretch, but that's just kind of like instantly where my mind went, like the framing and the car, like in what's in the in that panel. It's just like that's where my mind went. But I think it's illustrated even well there too with the judge. An eeriness about it when Joker's getting ready to leave and after he's dead, and just the positioning that the judge is in, his hands holding up that Joker card and the judge's head's awkwardly just leaned back with a smile. I'm like, that's just maybe that's why I think this one holds up well, given it's 84 years old. Is like, there's still some good kind of eeriness with this.
They even, you know, with that the judge scene and him being disguised as the chief, there's also, you know, he with his, you know, while the, you know, the judge is like, you, the police chief, the Joker, and he's like, he explained, you know, how disguise is one of his many accomplishments, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, him being some kind of master disguise. So I just wonder at that time. They're just like, he just is, you know, is yep. he, when he's the Joker, is it, you know, was it makeup? You know, they hadn't come up with the falling into the vat of chemicals, Red Hood thing yet. So I prefer the Joker too. So that's one of the reasons I'm so fond of this story. And, you know, that doesn't, you know, fine. You give me the explanation. That's fine. He's master disguise. You know, I did like when he's in a freaking suit of armor, you know?
Yeah.
Which, you know, you kind of want to go, okay, how did he get in the suit of armor? Well, who cares? Yeah. You know?
Who cares? I don't care. He just is.
We've seen those kind of shenanigans in shows. Someone, you know, just happens to be in the suit of armor all the time.
It's also cool. Like it's also cool. And it fits because it's like, it's not being completely repetitive, but the, you know, with Claridge being killed, it's like, okay, he's in a room filled with police officers all around. How's the Joker going to get to him? Oh, yeah. He got to him before he made the announcement.
Yes. Yeah.
So he was thinking way ahead of
spoiler alert.
Yeah. Ahead
only
of time.
84 years, you know, ago, but yeah.
So basically the crime's already been committed before it's even announced.
Yeah.
And so then, okay, so now we need to move on to the next victim. How do you heighten that?
Yeah.
Because they're already, you know, okay, well, we saw what he did. Is he going to do that again? No, he does something different. He's already hiding. He's already in the area. And the gas, the darts, and got him again. There's just like an elevation with each time. And then you think when he's going to get, you know, he's going to get old Brute, that Brute's, you know, got his posse there ready to take him down. Well, then there's the interference of the Batman, in which Joker, you know, he capitalizes on that. Like, basically, while Batman's busy with those guys, I'll take out Brute. And two elements here that I'm thinking of. One, I mean, it's just like notable that I do like there's a physical confrontation between Batman and Joker. But I like later on how the dart with the lapping stuff, you know what? It's and he shoots Batman with it, but the Joker has not reckoned with the amazing recuperative powers of the mighty Batman.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like Batman can just shrug it off. It's like, you start to see in the panel below, almost like there is a little grin forming. It's very small. But then the next one, it's almost like Batman just said, no. And so that they just move on. I appreciate kind of how hokey that is.
And he wears, Batman says, bulletproof vest.
Yes.
You know, the Joker's bulletproof shooting vest. At him. So see, he's got armor on even in 1940. Come on now.
Another element. I'll give you the floor here. The inclusion of Robin in this story.
Yeah.
Robin's new here. And yes. This isn't his debut, but Robin's fresh, hot off the presses at this time.
Yeah.
I am not a Robin hater. Dick Grayson is my favorite Robin. I can appreciate Robin being included. My preference, solo Batman. In this story, how important is Robin in this issue? Or this story, not the issue as it's called, this story. Exactly.
I think you could have told us. This is clearly to me an example of why Robin was brought into Batman comics, because it's straight up pretty much solo Batman story for most of it. You know, even basically, he's kind of like, "You stay home. I'm gonna go deal with this at one point." Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Robin's just, you know, it just shows up. You know,
mm-hmm.
at one point, and he's tied up. You know, Joker, you know, bops him in the head and Snooper, eh? Yeah, Snooper, eh? Yes. Yeah, you know, and then it's, you know, then Batman and Joker fight, and that's when he shoots him with the laughing the Joker venom. Dark, you know, mm-hmm. all that, and then Robin shows up. But we're, you know, it's not like Robin saved him from that, because it's kind of like Batman's like, he's such a freaking alpha, mm-hmm. it even exists. The alpha in him even goes to his physical abilities to thwart off a poison, you know, not like he's supernatural or anything. He's Batman, damn it. You know, and then it's just, you know, there's a scene of them running, you know, and you could have told the whole story without Robin, really. But it's like I said, it's so the kid reading it, the kid who's, you know, the purpose was have young kids that, you know, identify with Robin, so they, you know, envision themselves as Batman's partner. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like now I'm the reader. I'm the kid joining. I'm part of the story now.
Yeah.
I was always the one. I always wanted to be freaking Batman. So
yeah, I never dreamed of being Robin.
Yeah.
It's like, man, if I was Robin, I'd just be like, when's Batman going to be done so I can be Batman?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
So for me, I feel like the first, you know, there's only like, let's see, most of the story. Halfway through the story, Robin shows up in two panels as Dick Grayson. Mm-hmm. And he serves as just someone for Bruce to bounce dialogue off of.
Yes.
And then when he does suit up as Robin, and this was Batman Forever. Like, this was my problem in Batman Forever, even as a 9-year-old watching that movie, was like, Robin helped Batman out of the rubble. Then Robin had a cool suit. Went with Batman. All right, here we go. Batman and Robin are going to fight. Robin gets captured.
Yeah.
So Robin got introduced in this movie, but he got captured. In this story, Robin got captured.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just to what? Get Batman to the location? Remove Robin? Batman's got his infrared lamp.
Yeah.
To get both Robin and Joker's footprints.
Yep.
Could have probably just got Joker's footprints.
Yeah.
Into the location.
Yes.
So I'm like with you on the sense of, no, it doesn't, like, there's not an overreaction of Robin being included here. I'm not annoyed because Robin's included here. It's like objectively trying to look at this. And it's like, I think it could have had the same impact with no Robin.
Yes.
So therefore,
of course.
Could have been with that.
He almost commits murder. You know, he kicks the Joker, knocks him off the ledge of the scaffolding, and Batman grabs him, you know, you're too valuable of a prize to lose, he says.
Played your last hand, Joker.
Yes.
I did the two shot of Batman and Robin running. Like, that's flat out Adam West, Burt Ward. Not a moment to lose. And then, then a good shot that ends of Joker's busted when we see in the Daily Star, soon to be renamed Gotham Gazette, I'm sure. Batman captures Joker, leaves Joker in front of police station, drives away. I love that breakdown. He just drives away.
I love the end. You know, they have kind of a, you know, the Amazing Batman, America's most famous adventure strip character. With that sensational new discovery, that laughing young daredevil, you know?
Yeah.
Robin, the boy wonder. Anyway, so
it's like that needs framed just for you.
I love the whole, you know, the Joker behind bars, like, you know, the Joker will yet have the last laugh, you know?
And
we're going to see him again. And of course, nothing, you know, after a night of crime fighting and taking on the Joker. Nothing like the getting home to Wayne Manor and relaxing with by smoking your pipe.
That's right. You know? Yeah. Nah, what a day. Let me light up my pipe. Good one. Let's see. I mean, I think we've hit on a lot of points for a 13-page story.
Yeah.
Anything we didn't touch on that you want to?
No, I think we nailed it.
Scratched off everything on my list.
I'd say the only thing that's kind of is changed in a way with this Joker today is the dynamic that he's more of the mental psychological challenge to Batman.
Yeah.
Cause he's not a physical, but in this one, you know, it's like he's kind of holds his own a couple times with Batman.
Yeah. That's a good point. He wasn't right out the gate. Like, you complete me sort of Joker. Yeah. He was like, Batman's in the way of stopping him. He's trying to not get caught. So he's trying to kill him. At some point, I don't remember when, don't know when exactly, that changed into Joker's Batman's biggest fan, which I think is, I prefer that for sure.
Yeah.
I like that. That works really well for me.
You know, the whole two sides of the same coin, chaos and order and all that. That's something relatively new to the Batman Joker dynamic, you know, and then this is where you get a lot of that influence, like from the other Batman stories, Killing Joke, with, you know, his multiple
origins,
you know, I got these scars it, like you said, a lot of good bones here. I mean, this is clearly, you read this and you cannot say, oh, that's, I don't even recognize the Joker. You can't. Yeah. That's clearly that's the Joker.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you a couple questions now. The real challenging questions.
Yes, you've got a question?
First question. Bill, what was your favorite part of the story?
Wow. I liked the second murder and theft with
the armor. Yeah.
You know, and them thinking of how prepared they were.
Mm-hmm.
And he still pulls it off. That, you know, darts and I like that little part of it.
Me as well. I actually marked down that I really think my favorite part is the the opening up to the death of just kind of wondering. Now, granted, the first page has a drawing of the Joker, so you already see what he looks like.
Mm-hmm.
But it could have been cool, I think, too, if experiencing it. And so then I think of updating that in a TV show or a movie or something, and that could be played out really cool and creepy. Of like a cold open, in a sense of a creepy way of introducing a new version of a Joker is even like that time period. So 2024 TV show or movie that takes place in 1940, and a couple's just sitting around the radio, and you hear that Heath Ledger Joker, people will die, sort of deal. Mm-hmm. I just like how that plays out.
Yeah.
And because then you realize also of like how smart Joker actually kind of is too, and how he did all this before mm-hmm. he even made the announcement. So
yeah.
How about your favorite panel?
It's small,
mm-hmm.
very small, but when he's in the lair and he's, you know, sitting there and he's
on his throne
with his fingers mm-hmm. up to his chin, and he's, you know, talking about how he pulled it off.
Yeah.
You know, these fools. I don't know if he said that. But that's
to nobody.
You know,
he's like, yeah. Hey, you guys wondering how I did this? Let me tell you.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. So
there you go. That's, I think, for historical sake, like I try to be careful to not, you know, exaggerate or overemphasize or anything, be hyperbolic, like one of Joker's iconic images, because I think everybody yes, knows think what so. That's from. You see yeah. it, you know what it's from. Like, oh, that's one of the yes. first images of Joker ever. For me, I love the panel of him as the police officer holding up the Joker card.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And for us who know what that is, I think, like, I don't know, there's more to that image than just that image. You know what, like, oh, and not to mention it, like reading the story for like the first time of like seeing that panel, then it's kind of, you know, it's an oh shit kind of moment.
Yeah.
Kind of like how in The Dark Knight, as the music building and then the camera quick, as you know, quick shot too, there's Heath is, you know, looking like an officer turning the gun mm-hmm. is a quick like, oh shit kind of moment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I think that, you know, yeah. And I think the two play off of each other. So I like that panel a lot. Tricky question, but would you like to see this adapted in animation?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
You could do, I've said it many times, you can take a lot of these single short stories and then adapt it to make a 70-minute, 80-minute mm-hmm. animated film. You know, I've said it about the Joker's Five-Way Revenge, and certainly you could do with this one, you know? Kind of like a joke, the first meeting of Batman and Joker without, you know, an origin story like this one. This isn't need. You don't need an origin story here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like like a lot of the mentality of a lot of fans is like, well, that, you know, it'd have been better off if we need to know everything about the Joker and mm-hmm. how he came to be and all, you know, all that.
Tragic life with a wife and a child. And
yeah,
he lost his job at Burger King and, you know, something yeah. like that.
Yeah. So, yes, that's my answer. It could be. You could take this story and adapt it and make it a cool Batman Joker story.
Yeah, and obviously there's pieces of this. Instantly, I'm reminded one of my favorite BTAS episodes, The Laughing Fish, took part of this, took obviously Joker's Five-Way Revenge, you know, elements, mm-hmm. all that stuff. But like I said, in those stories, there's some of this story, you know, as a, you know, basis of it. And I think, I mean, we were talking Batman Caped Crusader before we started recording. And if that one takes place in a timeless period, I think you could totally work something like this into
mm-hmm.
an episode of that, into an introduction of the Joker. The audio adventures could have done something like that. You know, it's like,
yeah,
it's such a, I think the foundation of it is such a good story that you can update it to the times and have it totally work, which it has ever since its debut. So that's my long form answer, rather than just saying yeah. Like, duh, like you can do it, and I'll be there for it whenever they do, because they'll retell it again, you know. There'll sure. be another yeah. Batman meets Joker for the first time story yeah. again, and I think that'll be cool. How about does it? You have anything left to say? Any final words on the Joker?
No, I think we said it all, but I'm glad we did this one. I enjoyed reading it a couple of times here again.
Mm-hmm.
I especially love how it directly leads you to talk about the Dark Knight. Not, I mean, you, I'm talking about us
organically, because, organically, yeah, like,
because you really can't, you can't talk about this story anymore and not talk about the Dark Knight. That's mm-hmm. just, if you're going to talk about this particular Batman Joker story, you 100% have to bring up the Dark Knight movie.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yep. This was a good, I mean, still holds up as a good first appearance of a character. I think, and I've said it before, maybe I think I've said it to you, and it was on a social hour though, of like, I think Joker is like my second favorite character, like in pop culture, anything. It's just an interesting character to me. And I think, I don't know, like it's good to see a date, like, I don't know, this holds really well 84 years later, I think. So yeah, I'm glad you chose it as well, because I thought it was a fun revisit for me, and it made me think The Dark Knight, and that makes me happy. So
yeah.
Bill, thanks for coming back on. Always a joy.
Appreciate it. Appreciate you for having me on.
Why don't you plug away in case someone doesn't know where you're at?
Batman-on-film.com. There you go.
All right. Easy enough. Easy enough to remember. Dashes. Put the dashes in.
Yes. Yep.
There you go. Go to the website, batmanonfilm.com. Bill also generously posts the Batman Book Club episodes on there. Always appreciate it as well. If you want to follow Batman Book Club, you can do that on the social medias at the Batman BC. Make sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel of Batman Book Club, or me and good old Peter Vera, the Frolicker. We're gonna be diving into No Man's Land. That's gonna be happening really soon. So check that out. If you want to support the show, variety of ways you can do that. Like I said at the top, patreon.com/thebatmanbc, tpublic.com, type in TBBC. And lastly, if you want to support the show and you don't want to spend any money at all, it's 100% A-OK. The easiest, quickest, and most impactful thing you can do is rate and review the show. So however you listen to the show, go to the rate and review page, rate and review it, because it helps spread. The more reviews the show gets, the more it helps spread the word. And as Ra's al Ghul famously said, the word is panic. So for Bill Raimi, I am Ryan Lauer. And until next time, read my Batman comics. The Joker has spoken.